Channel 1 Oven, beginning of the visit with Roger Sims this Thursday evening, the 15th of October, 1970, at Channel 1 Over. Channel 1 Over this Thursday evening at supper, Roger Sims, 15th of October, 1970, Channel 1 Over. Channel 1 Oven, beginning of the visit with Roger Sims this Thursday evening at supper, 15th of October, 1970, Channel 1 Over. Beginning of the visit with Roger Sims this Thursday evening, 15th of October, 1970, Channel 1 Over. Channel 1 Over, beginning of the visit with Roger Sims this Thursday evening, the 15th of October, 1970. Roger Sims on WRUF, on WRUF, and the current radio.
More than 4 or 5 hours.
Mm-hmm.
I turned you on. Just in case it says something, I need to hear.
When today?
I just turned you on then. I didn't want to tape you without you knowing it.
You didn't tape me today.
I just started. I just turned it on just a minute.
Oh, you mean right now?
Yeah.
Oh.
That, you see, all these things you say, I don't know. Now, who is she? Is she, I mean, what is she? She has an hour?
She works for a couple hours in the evening. From 7:30 until 10:30. I guess it's 3 hours, come to think of it. But they come up one night a week or so.
Yeah.
And they work, they play, they don't have to do much of anything. They just read a little introduction and play a whole side of an LP. You know, it's like a symphony.
Oh.
Like Beethoven's. Well, I know myself because I listened to it more than once, but his fifth is self-contained on one album. So you listen to half of it, and then you have an intermission, listen to the other half.
Yeah.
And it's funny, I started that particular symphony. I heard everybody talking about Beethoven's fifth. You know, but yeah, Beethoven's fifth, so I listened to it.
Yeah.
Kind of a catchy tune.
Yeah.
She just has to reload something. She doesn't ad-lib, she reads it.
You're not going to put a student or a first or second time announcer up against the microphone and say, all right, take it.
Yes.
Now, you can do that to me or anybody that's been on the air for, see, I've been on for almost 2 years now. I got, I don't know how many thousand hours on the air.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't faze you one bit because you have so many things you learn.
Yeah.
Like you learn, all right, first thing you can do is you can read a weather forecast. You can give the time. You can give a station ID.
Yeah.
You can read a PSA. You can you can do a million different things while you're putting a record on and queuing it up.
Yeah.
You can sit there and talk. You can talk about WRUF-FM serving Gainesville and all of North Central Florida since 1928.
And you have all those any time.
You learn them because you use them so much.
Yeah.
Now, actually, the best humor and the best material is what just comes naturally.
Because
some of the best cracks I've made, according to other people, I found out later when I thought about it, they were things that just came to me.
Yeah.
Song titles you can make fun of.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Commercials you can make fun of. If you think about it, it sometimes isn't very good.
No, it's just got to come to you.
But if it comes to you, if it's really what you call, I guess, you know, wit, if it just comes like that, you know, like there it is, and you don't even have to think about it to say it. Now, of course, you should think about it, because if it's nasty, you get the station in trouble.
Well, but you've got a built-in control, I guess, over most of that.
Now, that's funny. When I first started, I dreaded that. Not really dreaded it, but I got all tensed up. I could feel the adrenaline start to run when I got to go in that control room.
Yeah.
I'll go in there now after a typical day, after 4 hours of class, just running around. After being in production and having people bothering me saying, what am I supposed to do about this or something? I'll say, all right, now it stops right now. Bong, I'm on the air. I walk in that control room. Nobody comes in that control room when I'm on the air.
So it's restful?
I just relax like that. I could fall asleep doing that show.
Yeah.
And I'm just happy as I can be. I can be upset and about to just, you know, like, I can't stand it, just all tensed up and everything. I get in there and 5 minutes later, I'm, well, how you doing this afternoon? Go, glad to see you here, you know, and it's just... That's why I go through so much trouble to keep it.
Yeah.
You like it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But those people on FM, they do it so that they can say that they've been on a console.
Oh.
They know the principles. They learn how to talk over a mic, and you take it in very small doses. And the concept is that when you run a record, you don't have to do anything with a record, but you sit there, and you're on that board, and you get familiar with it. You do it a few times.
Yeah.
You do a little bit of talking, and a lot of sitting. There's nobody else in there. And maybe you start to concentrate. You start to look around and get a little bit curious. I don't know if that's the main principle, but the thing is to get the student familiar. Get him familiar with the equipment.
Yeah.
Don't make him ad lib. Don't try to make him do anything fancy.
Because
that's when they get confused and frustrated and discouraged.
Yeah.
And you don't want to discourage a student that's trying to learn broadcasting.
Yeah.
So you give him something easy to read, a few lines.
Yeah.
Something they couldn't even lose their breath over. And say, all right, just start the record up. Doesn't have to be tight. You can have dead air for a couple seconds. On FM, I guess you could have up to 5 seconds of dead air. Nobody'd say anything.
Yeah.
Now on AM, you say 3 seconds. That sounds like an awful short time.
Yeah.
3 seconds. Boy, that's a short time. And yet if I were to go back to the station, sorry, turn your radio on and I'll give you 3 seconds of dead air at 7 o'clock. You'd say, my goodness, I thought you were never going to come back on the air.
Yeah.
But you're so used to having everything like that, you know, like GGG, the rock and roll station. They never have. Everything is right back to back all the way through.
Yeah.
The only time they have dead air is when someone's talking and pauses. And that's not even a second.
Yeah. Now, they have it all down on a continuous tape?
What?
WGGG.
Oh, no. They have... You've got your turntables, your records on it. Or, I guess it's GGG there right in front of you. You've got your mouth. You've got your cart machines. You know what I'm talking about, a cart player. Like a cart tape player. You just stick the thing. And you've got maybe three or four of them. And you'll be working along, and you'll have your record on. The record will, you'll fade down the record, open your mic, and say, you know, the impressions at 19 past 4 o'clock and make me love you, baby, or something like that. Say, you're listening to the pulse rate of number one, WGGG Gainesville, Florida. Bam, you hit a cart like that. In fact, you hit it a little bit before you stop speaking. So by the time the tape gets started, it's on.
Oh.
So you have sound from here, then you go from here to a record, then you talk, go back and forth. It's just one. Just a continuous mixing,
yeah.
mixing all the time.
And the announcements?
They're all taped.
Commercials?
All taped. Used to be, you know,
you plug them in?
You just push them in there, just a plastic cartridge. You just push them into a slot and give them a few seconds to get the speed up on the tape. And you just push a button, and this automatic clutch hits the tape and it plays.
Timing.
It's all timing, sure. These skit tapes that I produced, it took me an hour to get my timing down. Because you'd have to hit a sound effect. You'd have to compensate for the time to get the tape started. And so it would come in. Now, like, they had one scene where they're talking, let's go to New York. And then, well, here we are in New York. And on stage, they'll do it with spotlights. Fade down the spotlights and fade them up over here. And they're in New York. Well, now you have to sit there and you go, all right, let's go to New York. One, two, three, bam, like that. Crowd noise comes up. Here we are in New York.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a little practice to do that.
Yeah.
It's kind of an art. I guess you can be pretty creative with that stuff if you want to.
Sure.
Sure you can.
But you can... I've also heard people who use it for their own personal... not glorification.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
There's one fellow, his name is Ross. And I feel sorry. I really feel sorry for
him. Ice cream fan. He's had enough of this. He's about to play out.
You got me started talking.
Yeah.
Yeah,
well, don't stop eating.
Don't stop eating.
No.
Go ahead.
We'll give you 5 seconds or 10 seconds or as long as you want.
This one fellow, Bill Ross, I've seen him before. I don't like to make personal comments about people that I don't know. I mean, like say that he's this or that, because I don't know him personally. But he's got some kind of chip on his shoulder, and he is a little fellow. And I found out from being a big fellow that little fellows have chips on their shoulder.
Yeah.
And they make it known,
yeah.
Especially to me.
Yeah.
And, well, my best friend is an over 5'6". Short little fella. But I'd do anything for him. He'd do anything for me.
Yeah.
Fella Ross, Every other word is this is Boss Bill Ross. This is the Bill Ross Show. The Bill Ross Show.
Oh.
Every 3 to 4 minutes. And I was instructed, and I instruct the people that I'm supervised. You can say your name when you first come on, but don't say it anymore.
Yeah.
Because people listening don't care who you are. I mean, they might say, oh, I know him, or oh, yes. He's back again.
Yeah.
I really believe it. If you got something to say, I'm a great one to say this because I make a lot of noise myself.
Mm.
A lot of times I have to say, don't open that mic, you haven't got anything to say. But, now let me tell you this, we just got a poll back, a survey of the stations in town. And according to that survey, out of 6 stations, I pull 50% of the audience in the afternoons. 50% out of 6 stations. I saw that and I went, I'm going to ask for a raise. Why, 50% of the audience is unbelievable. Well, before I did anything, I read into it. That 50% is out of 4 phone calls made on one afternoon.
Yeah.
2 of them said they were listening to me, and 2 said they were listening to two other stations. Now, you know what that means? Absolutely nothing.
I'm saying most of them are listening to WZZZ.
You're exactly right.
This is the hardest thing for me to get. I don't know, this is for all the communications, radio, television, all that. You see, I listen at 5:30 to those fellas. You know, these fellas here.
Well, on the radio, they have a radio. You listen to the radio?
Yeah.
Report of them? That's, yeah. Yeah, Brinkley's back on, yeah. And the other one's,
yeah.
Edwin Newman.
Yeah, you know who I mean.
Yeah.
Well, it takes a good while to get it. And I don't seem to be able to turn on right at 5:30, you see. I gotta wade through a lot of stuff. And, then they'll say it's coming up. Then he'll say, have a line. And then you wait a minute. And then he talks about a minute and a half, 2 minutes. Then you've got 2 minutes. You know how that is.
Right.
Now that's the part I don't think is cricket. Now that's, that's all taped at that time.
It's different tapes though. The breaks, the commercial breaks are again cartridges.
Oh, really?
His voice is a reel-to-reel tape in most cases. I would imagine. I'd just stop the tape, play his commercial.
Oh, I see.
Start the tape again. It's hard to say, though, because the networks have mysterious ways. They do it the way that it's the most expedient, because they have to pay those engineers an outrageous price to run those tapes. Just outrageous. They get $15, $20 an hour, I guess, something like that. Just, even if they're just sitting there, they get paid quite a bit. I couldn't get a job in New York until I paid my $200 to get into the union. They do it the easiest way, the quickest way. The whole concept is, and it's all based on the system. The system is that you're giving it to the people free, in a way. They're paying for it by listening to the commercials. That's apparent.
Yeah.
All right, it'd be foolish to say give the Dow Jones averages and the stock report, and then play a commercial for the people who sponsored the stock report. Because you sitting here, you'd say, well, that's the stock report, click. But if they say, big news from Wall Street today, the Dow Jones averages have taken a radical change, and we'll have that report in a moment, then you're going to say, well, you're going to sit there and listen to it. No, I'm not going to defend that particular technique.
But just a little of it. But you see, out of about 4 minutes reporting, we've got half a dozen interruptions. That's all I mean, you know. It seems to me like it's overdone.
It's economics.
That's the economics. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, That's it. And I don't know what happens, but I guess a person gets conditioned to it and just...
Yeah, you must. I listened the other day to GGG. They're an interesting station. Because they flux so much, they change so much. They have problems over there. They've got a station manager who's strong. He's very unfair to the wrong people, in my opinion. He's very hard on the people who work the hardest for him. And he lets people, the big shots, so to speak, push him around a little bit. Then, after they pushed him so far, he just fires him. He's a strange man. He won't tell him. You know, you're going to get fired unless you cut it out. He'll just say, all right. And then a week later he'll say, I'm tired of you. You're fired. He's confused. I don't know what's wrong with it. This has happened in 4 or 5 cases.
Well, can you get new men?
Hmm?
Can they get replacements?
He runs a station. It's his station.
I mean, can he get somebody else?
Yeah. In this town? Why, there's probably 20 good announcers walking around without work. We have almost 20 on a waiting list trying to get a job at our station.
Oh, don't tell me.
Some of them have got third-class licenses and work commercial stations in Miami, Jacksonville. One boy worked in Atlanta. Fine announcers.
Why?
They can't get jobs.
I didn't know.
They just went to school, yeah. And can't get a job.
Now, last summer, Wayne Buttram from GGG called me up. Listen to your show. I said, oh, that's unusual for someone from WGGG. He says, well, now listen, let's get on friendly terms here. I just want to talk to you about something. We need somebody to help us out here a few hours a day. He says, how'd you like a job? I said, I don't know. Think about it. He says, $2.25 an hour. Well, I'm making 50 cents an hour less than that, and are you out? And I told him, I wouldn't work there for 3 times the money. Because I enjoy my security and I know I got it where I am.
Yeah, that nobody.
Nobody's gonna fire me there. I know that. There's no way. Unless I did something just flagrant.
Yeah.
You know, cussed on the air or stole something expensive or something like that. As long as I just keep
Now look, now you see, I don't get into this world much. I haven't listened to radio in years. It's left me. all the music's rock. It's all rock.
Well, it depends on what you mean by rock.
Well, it's all got the offbeat to it.
Well, no, I play some big band stuff quite often.
Yeah, but that's just exceptional.
Well, I guess I know what you mean. That's kind of a conditional statement. I guess I think I know what you mean. Well, it's true.
You wouldn't say it anyway.
Hmm?
To you, it's different. Now, country music, to me, it'd be just the same as rock. I wouldn't distinguish it. It'd be all the same.
Well, now, just out of curiosity, now, what would you like to hear?
I don't want to hear any of the arts. I want to hear music, drama, or anything.
You mean classical music?
Well, if I could, I'd love to hear a little of it every now and then. But I can get my own recordings. I don't need that. Oh, I don't know. Like Monitor, they have good people to say innocent things on the weekend.
That's some of the finest talent in the business, though.
Yes,
that's hard to get.
But look, it's nothing sustained.
Now their music is what you'd call rock, though.
Yes.
Very upbeat music.
But I'm talking about the talk.
Yeah, well, the talk's good.
But it's never sustained.
Well, you know, the thing behind that is, it's called a magazine format.
Oh.
And it's based on the concept that the average mentality of the person listening cannot hold attention for more than a few minutes on any one subject.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the advertisers, which again play a very strong part in this, because if they don't buy, the show doesn't go.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And the advertisers figure that they're going to shoot for the lowest common denominator of intelligence, of appeal.
Yeah.
Low as they can get without offending everybody. And by doing this, their standard is pretty low. It's pretty common most of the time. So they keep moving fast all the time, hoping that if you don't like what they got on now, you'll stay and maybe like something
the
next minute.
A few minutes later. Now, ideally, the best thing to do would be to have just multiple stations, a lot of channels in an area of limited power, and to have each one programming a specific type. But it's economically infeasible. You know, it's not possible. Because which station, if you're an advertiser, which station are you going to buy? You can't buy all 20.
All 20 of them.
You can spend a little bit on all 20 or a lot on one.
Yeah. You see, he's gone over all this.
Yeah.
Well, now, the only reason you listen to it is
just a little bit
you just have a professional interest in it.
I have an interest in it that I think it can be changed. I'm interested in the meeting because I like the work. I like what I'm doing.
Yeah.
But I think there's a lot of room in it, a lot of places to go, and a lot of room for creativity without having to be a genius. I mean, like, if you're going to be an artist, you've got to be good to survive. A poor artist trying to support a family is. But in radio, if you've got a new idea and you can find a place to stick it in, you can work with it. Try it out.
Yeah.
And that's what I like about it. Plus the fact that no 2 days are the same. There's always something different going on. Really.
Now, that little thing that Jonathan Ferris does, the bird watcher, how often is that?
3 days a week.
3 days a week? Well, now, is that a nice little idea?
Yeah. It's a damn good idea.
Yeah.
It has a small audience, but a very select audience, and a very, very faithful audience. He has maybe 500 listeners, I would say.
I think more people listen than that.
Well, okay, but I'm saying, well, maybe you're right. I don't know. I never really thought about it. That was kind of off the top of my head. You might be right.
I don't know. You know. You're just better.
Well, I think if I had 1,000 listeners at drive time is like prime time in the afternoon. Between 4 and 5 is when I have my most listeners.
Oh, really?
Yes.
On the... Is that right?
5 and 6
drive
is
drive time is prime time.
Well, that's what we call it in radio. In TV, it's prime time. We call it drive time.
Because
we're driving the commercials out as fast as we can make them. Not always, thank goodness. From 8 to 9 in the morning, from 7 to 9 in the morning and 4 to 6 in the afternoon. Oh. Those 2 times a day.
Wait a minute, let me see. You said drive time is prime time, and that's from 4 to 5 in the afternoon.
No. I work from 3 to 5 myself, but my last hour is the first hour of drive time. I'm halfway. My first hour is afternoon time.
Uh-huh.
You pay regular rates if you're a sponsor. Now, my second hour, you got to pay more to get a commercial on my second hour of my show.
At 4 o'clock.
Starting at 4 o'clock. If you say, I want my commercial on at 4:45, then I say, well, it's going to cost you an extra 75 cents a shot. Because more people listen between 4 and 6. Drive time, technically, is from about 7 until about 9 in the morning, and from 4 to 7 in the afternoon.
Drive time, that's when you're driving
peak listening.
Commercials.
Well, that's my own. Drive time is just when you push fast music, a lot of talk.
Well, that's not just your term.
No, but I don't, a lot of people don't use it. I just happen to use it because it makes sense.
I see. Well, your prime time then for the commercials would be from 4 to 6. And in the morning?
4 to 7.
4 to 7?
I'm getting you all confused. 7 to 9 in the morning, 4 to 7 in the afternoon. But I never work past 6. Work past 6.
7 to 9, that's when you're eating breakfast and on the way to the office. And after you get to the office, you can't listen.
Turn it off. And you don't listen again until you start home in the evening. And you listen in your car, theoretically.
Well, what are you...
Is that right?
Yes. Well, I have never turned it on in the middle of the day. I don't know what's on. Well, I'll never tell
you. Otis Boggs is on, the voice of the Gators.
Yeah.
One of the loosest radio show in the business.
Yeah.
Send 15 seconds of dead air and he'll come on just got this clear blue sky. Well, like nothing had happened. The whole station shuts off, goes off the air. Transmitter has an automatic thing on it. It shuts off if it, a buzzer goes off if it's, if the modulation goes down below minus 20. If it's just sitting there going like that, which is line noise, after 5 seconds, this buzzer goes off. And it drives the engineer crazy because he can't stop it until you start modulating it again. And he's out there going like this because the whole transmitter building is just screaming with these buzzers. Now he's on during the day partly because of that. They can't stand him during drive time. There's too much else to do.
Well,
he just circles all the time.
Yeah.
Now, you all don't have anything to do with the commercials.
Except play them.
They just come to you and they...
No, sir.
Huh?
No, sir. That's the greater part of my time.
Oh?
Yes.
Oh,
my official title at WRUF... well, I don't even know what it is, to tell you the truth. Cause I don't care that much.
Oh, McDonald's Hamburger.
Production chief.
Production chief.
And assistant to the program director, or assistant program director, any way you want to say it. What it means is that all the, it, when it, after it goes through Mr. Leach, who is the assistant manager of the station, he says, all right, Roger, here's the stuff. Now you take care of getting it done.
Yeah.
I spend more time writing and recording commercials than I do on the air. I was up there the other night, my immediate boss, the chief of announcers, who's away, he usually does commercials on Wednesdays, and I work 4 hours on commercials. I'd say 15-20% of the commercials that we play are taped in advance by an agency, New York, Atlanta, Miami, and sent to us. The rest, 70-80%, we make ourselves. We write them, produce them, put them on the air. Now that we have a professional writer, a line item, a professional who does this. But when he goes away for a couple weeks, I do it. He was sick, I did it then. And it's tremendous education. Because the style of writing, it's like nothing you ever saw. I've never had to lie so much in my life. You get this thing, a salesman comes in and says, all right, Ruddy's is having a sale. Shirts 20% off, pocketbooks 15% off. Write me 4 60-second commercials on that. You've got maybe 3 lines of substantive material. And the rest you've just got to BS.
Got
to fill it in.
Yeah.
Tricky little slogans. So. Summer sizzling, summer savings. That was one of my lines last time. Sizzling summer savings. Look forward.
And that's all you have. Well, now let me tell you, I have tried to listen to commercials, Roger. You know, people say they're catchy and all like that. Well, I'm not looking for catchy things. I'm looking for information.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if they put on, don't you know, like they have appliances on and tell you about the appliances, the vacuum cleaners, I don't care what, I'd love to listen to them.
Well, all right, I was exaggerating. This can happen. On most commercials, you have to make several different passages, like we call them cuts. You have to make up, on the average order, say, let's see, what was the last one I wrote? It was for Ruddy Twig. They sent in an order with a style sheet on it, or a tear sheet rather. That tear sheet had enough material to write 10 60-second spots. And I had to cut it down and eliminate except everything that was very important. It can work either way, but most of the time you find yourself having to weed out a lot of stuff on sales.
Yeah.
But many times they'll call in and say, listen, I'm not getting the traffic through my store. Give me something catchy. Get me some people coming in. So you have to say, well, you got to have something going on down there. Well, all right, we'll give away Cokes.
Oh, they've got the raw material for you to use. They get it from their outlet people.
Well, either that or they just tell you what they want. People from Voiles call up and they just give you a list of things that advertise. 4 Gibson freezers at $495 a piece, advertise 2 ranges at such and such a price. Put this all together, let's call it an anniversary sale, all right? Fine. Well, let's see, we'll buy a schedule. We want AM and PM saturation drive time. We want 15 spots a day. Run that schedule for 2 weeks and then cut it back to 7 spots a day for 2 weeks. And then you just take that, you write up a schedule, give it to the traffic director, girl or secretary, who schedules them on the logs, and then you go back and write something up. And you try to, you know, if you just list like Sean Keeter called in, didn't call in, but they sent in an order one day, and they had about 10 cars, 64 Ford Galaxy with air conditioning, all tires, radio, and heater, 65 Comet with such and such and such, and they wanted a pretty light schedule, I guess. They wanted about 10 commercials to run on those. Now, if you just sit there and just list them, unfortunately, a lot of people aren't going to pay any attention to it. Now, see, for you, you listen to that, because you might be interested to see if they've got a car down there you might want to look at. But people condition themselves, you see. Something's got to catch their attention. So many people are working, typing. Got the radio sitting over here, got it going, just to keep something going.
Oh.
If they hear something like, "Hey, baby," they're going to go, "Huh, what's that?"
And this is your assumption. I mean, this is what happens.
Well, it does. If you look on your screen and you see a guy sitting there, and he's got a bowl of spaghetti turned over on his head and it's streaming down his face, you're going to sit there and watch and see what the heck's going on. You're going to say, "Now, what is that? Is that a commercial for spaghetti,
yeah,
or for Excedrin, or what?" But if you see a lady sitting, or you see a man sitting at a desk, and he's going like this, and he's talking about aspirin, chances are you're not going to pay too much attention to it, because you've seen that so many times before.
Yeah.
It's a whole trend in the industry.
Yeah.
Creativity. Get him something different ideas. Something catchy.
Yeah.
Make them want something they don't want. That's the basic premise right there. Because
yeah,
the things people want, you're never going to have to advertise. How many times do you see them on television, really, advertising meat?
That's right.
You never see people advertise meat. If it is, it's a sale and that's all. Or they're trying to compete with another supermarket. But they're not trying to build up consumption of meat. They know damn well people are going to have to buy meat to live.
Yeah.
Or you're not going to see a let's see. What's
well,
a good
you,
example?
You like a glass of milk?
No, it's fine.
You want a cup of coffee?
I can't drink coffee.
You want some chocolate molasses?
No.
You want some more ham?
No, listen, thank you very much. I'm fine. I feel just right.
You don't have to be polite.
I'm not being polite. I won't
say the refrigerator is there.
I won't be polite. You know what I eat.
I'm not very hungry. I haven't been doing anything. I've just been doing desk work. I'm
fine.
That's all.
I'm so used to eating one of those little portions that I've...
Isn't that fun?
I don't see how you survive on those.
I don't know.
How you survive? You go to the cafeteria, you can say, "Give me a double helping."
Well, I guess in pretty much money. I don't know. I go home on Sundays and eat dinner at home and eat like I do here. Mother knows I'm coming home. I just say, "I'll be home Sunday, eat dinner." She'll say, "Oh, good Lord." Goes down and buys another 5 pounds of steak or something.
That's wonderful.
My friends,
and in between, you just snack.
Yeah. Now, see, the problem is, if I had a kitchen, it'd be a lot different. As I lived last year, I've moved about 6 times. I can never seem to settle down anywhere. I don't know.
Oh.
I always either get moved in with, well, let's see, one time, the guys were just using too much dope, too much drugs. They started using drugs, and I just, I have no reason to want to tell you something that isn't true, but I just don't go for it. Never have. I don't care what other people do, but it's so dangerous. Because if they catch you with it in the house, they can't. I can say, "I don't care anything about it," but they'll say, "Well, I'm sorry, you live with them, mm-hmm, and there's the stuff, and you had access to it, therefore you might have used it."
Okay.
Oh, yes. It's Florida law. If you know where it is, and if you can get to it, then you're guilty of possession of it. If it's locked up, if it's in your roommate's dresser drawer upstairs, they can arrest you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now I have great aspirations like everybody else. I think like everybody else, and I want to be able to get a job when I get out.
Sure.
If I want to go to law school, I want to be able to go to law school and serve in a court. You can't do that if you get arrested.
Yeah.
You get a felony on your record, you'll never get accepted in the first place.
Yeah, that's what
you're saying. So I moved out on them. And then another place I tried was $120 a month, and that's too expensive.
Yeah.
Roger, that's terrible.
I remember when we paid $150 house rent, I thought the world had come to an end.
It's just too much.
Yeah.
That was
a very big house, but...
And that was years ago. It would probably be twice that much.
Oh, yes.
You should see that $150 just winging out.
Yeah. Now, my folks built a big house. Huge house. Southern Colonial. 15 rooms. Air conditioned, all the wall carpeted. Mother always thought she wanted it. I've told her before, I said, are you still so sure you want it? And it seems so strange to me when there were six of us, there were six kids at home.
Yeah.
We had a little three room house and three of us shared a room together.
Yeah.
All the time. But now that my little brother's the only one left, the rest of them are, you know, California, North Carolina, Cleveland, you know, all over the place working. There's my folks and my little brother living at home, and they've got two guest rooms and my room. I got a room, you know, that they keep for me. Big recreation room and a pool table, and there's nobody there.
You know, they say that's the way it is when you build a house. After you get it built, you get a little money, you start buying tools. shoot.
Yeah. Yet I knew some friends with them. Strangely enough, one of the boys that was getting into marijuana and all this stuff so much, his parents are, I'm very fond of them, and I have just admire them very much. They never bought a house, and they never paid more than $120 a month rent on a house, as a matter of principle, and they lived in Europe for many years. And they came back here, and they rented just an old, you know, just a place to live. But they have been to more places and done more things than any two people I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
They're completely mobile.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
Sure. They get, he's an investment consultant.
Yeah. That's what it takes.
You just don't need to be tied to.
Yeah.
Anyway, you might, permit me to score some points here. You might say he's kind of a modern day wood chopper.
That's right.
I had to say that. I would have written that down if you'd asked that question.
Well, I don't know. The communications in my view are just gone to pot. Radio's, television, not quite as far along as radio. But it's going fast.
Good to hear.
Now, you see, this Today Show, I listen to that and get ready, good deal. But you pay the same price you do to get to hear Brinkley at 6 miles city. You've got to wade through a whole lot of intermissions and station breaks, you know. Except I've got the jigger here. I can cut them off. But it's tedious. You still got to sit to it, wait for him. Well, Hugh Downs comes on and starts to say something, and you don't know whether he's going to bring a dog from out under there and start rubbing it and feeding the dog food or talk sense. Now, you see, that's, you know, you say, well, you take that as a sense of humor. Yes, but it's sad.
You think we'll ever get the subscription kind? You know, you don't think so?
Not for a long time.
Now, Channel 5 has a good thing.
Yeah, but you know, the whole thing about it, though, is the whole way the industry's set up. The basic fault of the whole thing is the economic basis.
Yeah.
That's just the whole question. That's it, right in one word, economy.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do it. If you start programming to any one group, you're going to alienate the rest of the people.
Yes. They, I find these Jacksonville people sort of flat-headed. I don't know much about them on the Channel 4 there. Now, some of them are all right, but I mean the states people run. Now, they had those public service, public fast programs. You know, Face the Nation.
Mm-hmm.
All right. They took that off. at 1 o'clock and put a football sports session there where they sit around and talk sports. Yes. And you know where they put Face Nation? 11 Sunday. At the church. I wrote them. I hadn't noticed that. I wrote them. And I said, you know, just some sort of halfway cutting. Not really. It was human. And I always, right like that, I always put a note at the bottom. Don't take your time to, no answer. Ask one. He wrote back and said he'd like to point out that they were, as far as public service programs, they were didn't have a pier in the southeast.
They're the worst in the southeast, huh?
Had no pier. And if I would look a little further, they'd find, well, 11 Sunday is the last time I'd expect to see those fellas on 11 Sunday. That's it.
Yet you know what the number one seller on television is today? People pay more to have commercials run during, and what people watch more?
Mike Douglas. By far, Mike Douglas.
You like Mike Douglas?
No.
No, I don't
good.
Respect
that.
My listener. What,
Roger? That's true. That is mediocre.
Yeah.
Football. Professional football.
Yeah. Is that
sponsors
right?
Pay up to $50,000 for a 1 minute spot.
Yeah.
Some of that football.
Really?
$50,000 for Sunday afternoon football.
Now, all this Thursday night movies.
They pay through the nose for that, too.
Yeah. Every 5 minutes. If that is not phenomenal, you talk about the human race. You know, we don't read the, you see, this is not a course in Mark Twain, but you know, the older he got, the more he saw, and he'd get started on the, what he called a fraud, or Teddy Roosevelt was one of his frauds. I haven't read much, in some of the autobiographies, the discarded passages of the autobiography. When he was old and lined up in bed and he's dictating, just talking it out, he'd hold forth on Teddy Roosevelt as a fraud. But anyhow, he's really hard on the fraud.
Twain, I still can't figure him out.
Twain?
But the thing is, he says it. I was always impressed with the kind of experience in reading. Well, you don't realize what you read or what it said to you until you stop and think about it. Now, that's good. Because then there's no way that your conscious mind in its confusion is going to distort what the message is. Now, you said something in class the other day, and I'll probably never forget it. It was just phenomenal. Because it's something that's very real to me right now at this stage in my life. You say you get to college and you can't experience anymore, you start abstracting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the term for it, the psychological term, is intellectualized.
Yeah.
Everything you do, I say, hey, I'm gonna drive down to the Miles Farm and I'm going to get back to nature for an afternoon. Well, I'm not going to get back to nature for an afternoon.
Yeah.
I could go out there and camp in that field for a week and never really get back to anything.
Right.
But when I was 13, 14 years old, I forget which summer it was, but I think I was 14, I went to Tennessee for 3 weeks. No showers, no lights, just a tent. There were 10 of us, one man, about 28, 29 years old, who was our supervisor, and the rest were teenage boys. And he was building a camp up there through the YMCA. And we went into wilderness that the government had just opened near Etowah, Tennessee. It was called White Oak Flats. And we got off at Etowah. Had a pickup truck loaded with canoes and went out into that forest and built a camp and lived there for 3 weeks. We had to, you know, clear out a place and along the shore. We'd wash the clothes and find a stream we'd drink out of. And, you know, really, water does come out of the ground. You can drink it right out of the ground and it won't kill you.
Yeah.
And I could talk to you for a week.
Yes.
All day about the things that I did.
Yes.
But if I went back and did that again, I wouldn't get the same thing out of it.
No.
Unfortunately.
Well, now, let me tell you, Not many people know that. I got into it most of life waiting. I never read the book. I got into it through Emerson and Twain. And it took me a long time to get into it through them. I tell you, the thing that helped me the most was this one in class. I told you about that. And I had been taping. And I had this down on tape, and I knew it wasn't Leonard talk, but I knew it was good talk. And I listened to it. I gave it names, three studies. I've got it. It's you can listen to it. It's about 3 hours, four sides, stereo. And then I wrote it out too. I wrote it out. And I just, you see, it's what people call old fashioned talk, and I wouldn't accept that because it restores me. I go and talk and listen to that talk, and it'll just bring me life, just like spring water. And I just looked at it and listened to it. See, on tape, I could do that. My mind, my faculties weren't sharp enough. But once I had got a hold of the tape and could get some on tape, see, that was my salvation. That helped me. And I looked at it, and I wanted to see what was it, you see. I wanted to see just the basic quality. And one of the first things that appeared to me was that it is, and I use all this in the Emerson thing, that it is basically informative. All that talk is solid information. There's no gimmicks. There's no nervousness. They're not chattering, you see, fill up the time. All that talk is solid information. It's on the tapes. And I've got reel after reel after reel, just like that. It's solid information. You see, they live within that experience. Now, there's a lot I don't know about it. But you know, once you look at things, and get a little cool. You catch things. Well, Edward Newman interviewed Susan Sontag. You know her? Well, she's that young woman who's a professor of philosophy at Cornell. And right, gifted. And young. Or youngish, I guess, maybe 30. But she's been a star. She's been a professor since she was a child. And she said, I had missed the connection. But she said the Americans had been able to abandon that experience or transfer it, just leave one section of it and pick up another section of it, without killing them. And she said Freud was always right gloomy. He had always been gloomy. And I never got the connection. And I kept thinking, you know, if I hadn't had so much else to do, I'd have dropped her a card. I could have bought her a book, you see, and looked at it. I'd drop her a card and ask her if she had sort of set me straight on that. But see, she knew all that. I don't know it. It's in that, did you read the college English here?
No, I took a advanced placement. I never had to take any.
Mr. Bigelow has that little essay in it called A Promo of Existentialism. And one of the displacements, you see, is just that. He just mentions it. He doesn't go into it. Is the increased direction towards abstraction and leaving the experience. But you see, you could canvass your colleagues and your classmates and two or three of them would notice that.
You know, part of it you might put, since you're curious about the media, You can attribute part of this, I truly believe, to the technology. You can see it in art very clearly. I really can't place it exactly, but up until the 18th century, up through the 17th century, they couldn't take a photograph of something. And paintings could be paintings, of course, are always representations, but a good painting of the Duke of Luxembourg was worth something because it represented the Duke, and all it had to do was represent his appearance to be worth something to people. But then in 1850s, photography came along, and then you could just take a picture, so that ruined the value. All right, then men started painting things into their pictures. Picasso. Who's the little Frenchman? Forget his name. Well, anyway. And you have to start, things are so formalized and categorized and broken down and analyzed that to see something just for what it is, not satisfying, I guess, anymore. It's not good enough to know that if you put rocket fuel in a tube and set it on fire that it's going to go to the moon. You've got to know why. You've got to know what's up there. It's not good enough to say that it's beautiful. You've got to know what's up there. It's just that we're expanding so much and we've explained so much that we've gone up one alley. Now we got to start pushing off in another direction. Which, I don't know, it's making a lot of people sick.
Well, the historians talk about those things, like this Arthur Clarke, don't you know, last night on the video civilization. That's one thing that keeps the civilization becoming static. And, they could say such things as that, but it, it just keeps them too mobile, feverish, like I feel after I spend a week up there on the campus.
Feverish? Week?
just feverish, like I need to soak my feet in cold water, put a cloth on my head.
When my daddy comes home from work, he's in a got the same kind of problem. But it must be awful hard to have your values challenged constantly.
Yeah, constantly.
I don't remember where it was, but I wrote down one time that I thought that part of the problem today is that the kids don't realize that the older generation isn't saying that they don't like some of the values that are being put forth now, but the fact that they don't like to have their values just thrown in the dust.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I wish I could be committed to one way or the other, but I can't, because for some strange reason I feel like I'm on the outside looking at both sides. Well, I can talk to my old man, and he says, when some student comes in and says that he is a lover of nature and that he sleeps out in the woods every night and never opens a book, and he says to me that he doesn't need to work to get ahead in life, where my daddy worked for years and years and years, day in and day out. He was in retail grocery business before he came to the university.
Yeah.
And he'd had his education. And he's, he's an intelligent fellow. But after working all those years, I don't know if he could stand the thought of maybe someone getting away with that without having to work.
Yeah.
And I can see what he feels, but on the other hand, I can envy the fellow who can enjoy life and get a lot out of it. Because you can get to the point where you're working too much, and it's just going by.
Yeah.
Well, I get that feeling all the time.
Right.
I'm 20 years old, and I feel like the last 2 years at college I have gone like that.
Yeah.
Just like that.
Yeah.
I got back. I was lucky enough to get to go to Europe for a summer. And that was a pretty long summer and fantastic experience. But ever since I got back from there, it's just a blur.
Yeah.
But you know, you always feel that it's just only the people who are older that feel as if time is flying. And I remember how caught up I was. I had a 7-year-old student, and it was right after just right before Christmas. And she came in one day and she said, "Ms. Miles, it just doesn't seem any time till last Christmas. It's gone so fast." Of course, now she could have heard her mother say that, but I had a feeling that she really felt it. And then for me, at 7 years old, from one Christmas to the other, was an eternity.
You know, my younger brother is 6 years younger than I am. My youngest brother. And there's a generation gap between us a mile wide.
Mm-hmm.
He's 14. And he seems to me to be like he could be 18, and I believe it. He seemed like he matured so much faster than I did. Maybe it's just the fact that I look at him more objectively or something, or I can see him. I felt like, it seems like when I was his age, I didn't worry about a lot of things that he's concerned with. And I couldn't understand a lot of the things he seems to understand. Whether he does or not, I don't know.
Is Boggs a great voice down at the...
Boom! Threw me off the track. That's all right. Otis Boggs is a fine, fine sportscaster, and I'll defend him anywhere.
Yeah.
I think he does an excellent job.
Yeah.
And he is one of the nicest men I ever met in my life. Otis has never said a cross word to me in the 2 years I've worked there.
Yeah.
Never. He has never been unpleasant with anybody I know. And he's got personal problems you wouldn't believe.
No.
He's got a very, very unhappy situation with his wife at home.
Yeah.
She has a lot of... She's a very sick person. He's got an excuse to be a gloomy person.
Yeah.
If he was very upset all the time and selfish, egotistical, and like kept to himself or wouldn't tolerate other people, I could see why in his case.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not that way at all. You know, it's funny, I got another friend who's lost two fathers. His natural father died of a heart attack, his mother remarried, and his second father died of the same thing, I believe. And he's just as buoyant as he can be. And yet here
but
I am.
Otis, what's Otis's gift?
Otis's gift is that he keeps his cool. He has a very clear, appealing voice. His voice quality, for one thing, is excellent. When he does a game, you can stand right next to him and barely hear him. He has learned the trick of making the microphone work for him.
Oh, really?
That's how he can do. That's how he can do 3 hours without his voice getting tired.
Oh, really?
Sure. He just sits in there and he'll just talk like I'm talking to you. When I announce, I don't sound anything like this when I announce. I got up there and say, sound like that. He doesn't do it. He talks naturally. That's his gift. He's a natural. And he can sit there, and you can go up to him. You can go right in front of him, sit there and go,
"I can't get him to work. I can't get him to work on that one." Just about all I can go by is when there's enough voice in here to fill the microphone. That's sort of my rule of thumb. And that means, you see, I never get up close to it. For my purposes, see, Otis, his system wouldn't work. I want full voice.
Let me see. Here we go. ID. Looking at his watch. Got a federal regulation, you got to give an ID within 2 minutes of the hour, either way. ID. Come on, Otis. Now, this will go. So, with the ball down on the 30-yard line...
That 904 is 904, and they're about equal distance from a mouth, about a foot and a half, about 18 inches out there, about 18 inches, and two of them this time. It's stereo this time and not just one track. And the point is, see, that if the two tracks will be one whole track better than one half track.
Talk a little bit louder.
Just a little bit louder? I can talk just a little bit louder and put it out there, still about that same distance.
Okay, let's see what that... He'll sit up there, and he knows the play so well. See, the teams that play, he memorizes the numbers. Say number 35 is Joe Schmo, and number 36 is, you know, whoever it is. And he knows plays. He keeps up with all the current college plays.
Now, how do they talk to him?
They just talk to him like I'm talking to you, only a little bit quieter. He has a microphone right in front of his mouth. You couldn't hear it. It's a directional mic. I believe they use cardioid patterns up there, maybe a shotgun pattern. It won't pick up. You could sit right behind the mic and go like that, and it wouldn't pick it up.
Oh.
So.
Well, now, improve my system out here a little bit, Roger. All I have is this thing. And
what is that?
There's a microphone. And
I want the tape.
Huh?
I want the tape. You can't do that to me. I didn't know you were
told you. He told you to turn the tape on.
Oh, has it been running all this time?
Well, just since I told you. I was interested in what you said on the radio, and I just didn't go in there and bother to turn it off.
Well, you sly dog, you.
Well, now look.
Yeah, he did. He told me. I forgot about it.
Let me tell you. My experience is that hardly anything that's ever said matters. It all depends on your tone of voice. If you're mad and cutting, it's one thing. But just an ordinary tone of voice, you can say almost anything about anybody, and there's nothing to take offense at. That's my experience. You wasn't going to say it on the air. Now, that's the best I can do. That's not directional. That's just, it'll pick me up almost right here. It'll pick me up about as well as it'll pick you up.
Well, why do you have it covered this up?
Just to keep, you see, most people, you see, are not used to them, not conditioned to them.
Yeah.
That's all. Just to keep them from being conspicuous, you see.
Just that's going to sound good on your tape.
If we have...
No, it's been off.
If we have, say, if we're going to tape some member of the countryside, like the niggers in the plane, for Georgia Southern nigger, you know, she knows she's being taped, but if she sees that thing right in front of her...
Yeah, and then she's got the thing spinning, you know.
See, she knows she comes up and that we get her story.
I can put it on here, but I don't.
No. Well... I never noticed it. And I thought, I thought, boy, you know, I'm really sharp. I'm so with it as far as equipment. I thought I wouldn't. I thought you probably had it hanging from the ceiling or somewhere. Or
yeah. You know, this would do just as well.
Slipped it right by me.
Well, that's all. I just put that over this scarf. That's all.
You're going to find either people are going to go, either they're going to go, well, what I wanted to say was, you know, or they're going to just.
Nobody ever noticed it.
Well, it got Roger. We looked at it at the end, and he got it goat. He hadn't realized that he had been taped. He really didn't notice. That Roger Sims, this Thursday night, the 15th of October, 1970, Channel 1 over. Channel 1 over. This Roger Sims, this Thursday night, the 15th of October, 1970, Channel 1 over. This is the end of Channel 1 over and the end of the visit with Roger Sims. He came out to tell me about mass media, how WRUF works. This Thursday night, the 15th of October, 1970, Roger Sims, this Thursday night.